This is Leafs Breakfast.
Everything is going right for the Toronto Maple Leafs these days. They close the month of November 12-2-0, and they begin the month of December tomorrow night at home with a game against the Colorado Avalanche. Let's welcome in our hockey insider here on Leafs Breakfast. It's our good friend, Chris Johnston. Good morning, my man. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're doing very well. I'll speak for Carlo on that because I know he's doing well in addition to myself. And CJ,
beautiful
I'm
day.
Sure people, exactly. Another beautiful day. More snow falling as I look outside.
Yep.
Too soon.
Beautiful.
I know. No kidding. CJ, I'm sure people stop you on the street. You know, you're walking around King West, maybe grabbing some Jimmy's coffee and talk about how hot the Leafs have been. We know they've won 14 of their last 16 games, but I think people are simultaneously struggling with processing wins in November as opposed to series wins in April. What do you tell the average Leafs fan who is struggling with this sort of predicament?
It's a tough one. Look, I'm not really in a position to tell fans anything. I mean, they're the ones investing their passion and their money and all that into the team. But
tell them, CJ. Tell them.
But here's what I would say is that, you know, you got to enjoy the journey in your life no matter what you're doing. And, you know, you know, I've been around covering the Leafs for a lot of years, you know, prior to this administration and kind of core set of players. And you know, you were waiting for a team that was this good. I mean, the Leafs have basically been a 100-plus point team for six seasons running now. And, you know, they haven't delivered the ultimate success for you in the playoffs. But there's a lot to cheer for. And, you know, I actually still think they've got another level from where they are now. Maybe not that they're going to win at a better percentage, but, you know, I still see some of their top guys looking to get into their best form. And so, you know, I would just say invest your passion again, because this could be the year. I know, you know, people feel like they've been burned in the past by that, but, you know, there's no reason when I look league-wide to think the Leafs aren't one of the top five teams in the NHL. And, you know, that's really shown here the last 6 weeks or so.
Breaking news. Chris Johnston is telling everybody in Toronto to start planning the parade. There we go. CJ, what can you tell us about some of the guys that haven't played for the Maple Leafs during this amazing stretch? Ilya Mikheyev, Peter Mrazek. What do you know about their potential returns to the lineup?
Well, it's certainly getting closer for Mrazek. He was on the trip with them in California and you know, has been on the ice. And you know, I think that they'll show some caution there because, remember, he did come back from an initial groin injury early in the season, and then immediately, you know, has been on this second injury, you know, period now. So, you know, the good news is Joseph Woll's given them a couple of good starts and allowed them to get some victories. And obviously the team's just been winning so much. I think they can show patience with Mrazek, but, you know, it does seem like he's getting to the end stages of when we'll see him play for back in the net. And, you know, as for Mikheyev, the good news about his injury being a hand injury is that, you know, he's been able to skate the whole time. So conditioning, you know, shouldn't be much of an issue for him, you know, once he gets back and joins the team of practice, but that hasn't happened yet. And so I think he's a little more long off before we see him join the lineup. And I think it'll be interesting when he does. I mean, who knows how that long of an absence will impact him, but, you know, obviously things aren't entirely set, particularly on the left side of the forward group. And you know, we did see Mikheyev in training camp get some reps higher in the lineup than he's played in the past. And so I wonder if, you know, if it comes time when he's back, if you're seeing him maybe get some time with Austin Matthews or maybe even on that second line with Tavares.
12-2-0 for the Maple Leafs in the month of November. Jack Campbell in the month was 9-2-0 with three shutouts and a .959 save percentage. He's the hottest goalie in the NHL right now, that's safe to say. And there were reports earlier this season that the Leafs were interested in engaging in contract talks with Campbell. We know he's a free agent at season's end. That was contradicted by his agent. Have you heard anything about material discussions between the two sides, considering how unbelievable he's been of late?
I don't think there's been too much going on there. I mean, certainly they've been in contact, but, you know, the trouble, and it's a good problem to have, admittedly, but you know, the market is kind of set. You know, there's a few goalies out there, Cal Peterson in L.A. being most recent, that you know, got a $5 million annual hit on a three-year deal from the Kings with, you know, similar kind of career numbers to Jack Campbell, you know, not a huge body of work as an NHL goaltender. And so, you know, I think if the Leafs are willing to go and pay something in the range of $5 million, they could probably have the contract done today. You know, I'm not sure they want to do that yet. You know, obviously, I think they would.
I'm not sure what they're waiting for.
Well, I mean, I see both sides of it. You know, he's performing well without the security of the contract, so you can't argue that, you know, that's causing any issues here. And obviously, they got a little bit of an issue. They gave Peter Mrazek $3.8 million on a three-year deal, so two more seasons beyond this one. I mean, we've barely seen him play. He's been injured all year long. And so, you know, I don't think that they're in a position where, let's say, they pay Campbell $5 million just for a round number's sake, and if they have Mrazek at $3.8 million, I'm not sure they can put $8.8 million in their goaltending pile next year just with the way their salary cap breaks down. And so, you know, I guess the argument would probably be that his value probably won't go up too much. I mean, I guess if he finishes the year and he's 930-something and he goes and wins the Stanley Cup, he's asking for more than $5 million. But, you know, probably if you're in the front office of the Leafs, you're looking at it and you know that that's basically, you know, it's a pretty specific number, but I think that that's where the range is likely going to be to keep him, or that's where he'll get somewhere else if he ends up leaving as a free agent. But it's unlikely that he's going to be worth $7 million at the end of the year. And so, you know, maybe it's best just to let it play out, see what you have in Mrazek, see if maybe there's a chance to trade Mrazek. You know, that might be one thing that makes it make sense. But certainly, you know, I think that Jack Campbell, all things being equal, wants to be a Maple Leaf beyond this year, and they like him too. And obviously he's earning that next contract with the way he's played so far this season.
CJ, some surprising news surfaced yesterday around the league in Boston as Jake DeBrusk apparently has asked for a trade openly through the Boston Bruins. He's a guy that makes 3.6, going to be an RFA next year, doesn't really like the, you know, the playing time that he's getting in Boston. What can you tell us about that scenario and whether or not what the interest is around the league for a player like DeRozan? I got to imagine he's pretty high sought after, no?
Yeah, you know, this is a situation that's been brewing for some time. You know, I think that Jake DeBrusk and Bruce Cassidy have had their ups and downs, you know, over the years. And really, in some ways, DeBrusk's fate was probably sealed when they not only traded for Taylor Hall last year at the deadline, but then signed him this summer because, you know, essentially when you're a left winger on the Bruins, you're going to be playing behind Marchand and Taylor Hall. You know, the ceiling for you when everyone's healthy is a third line left wing. And, you know, I'm not sure that role suits DeBrusk as well. You know, the Bruins have some concerns about his defensive play when he's playing third line minutes. Obviously, he's not producing much offense or getting the same offensive opportunities. And so, you know, I just feel like this is a relationship that it's probably best for both sides to move on. And I think that there's a fair amount of interest in him. I mean, it really comes down to the cost. You know, you wouldn't be trading someone like Jake DeBrusk at a premium right now, just because of the way his season's gone. He was scratched on Sunday night. He's got just 6 points this year. And, you know, he's only 1 year away from UFA, I believe. You know, he is an RFA at the end of the season, but, you know, he's coming up to the point where you don't have a lot of team control on him. So, I think that he'll probably have to be traded for maybe a player in a similar spot, most likely. But certainly, you know, I think that you're going to see resolution here. There's nothing imminent, I don't believe, on the trade front, but there's enough interest around the league that, you know, I think that this will happen and they'll find DeBrusk a new home.
In conversation with our TSN hockey insider Chris Johnston here on TSN 1050, and the Jeff Gorton era for the Montreal Canadiens got off to a start that was very reminiscent of the Marc Bergevin era, a loss to the Vancouver Canucks. And I was very fascinated yesterday, CJ, to hear Jeff Molson, the owner of Montreal, say, "I'm not afraid of that word being rebuild. I think our fans wouldn't be afraid of that word either." What would a rebuild look like for Montreal, considering Carey Price still on the books? We don't really know what's going on with him. I mean, we know they gave that huge contract to Nick Suzuki. Who would be on the way out if a rebuild was actually put in place for Montreal?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think they have an easy rebuild, frankly.
No,
I mean, they've already kind of, I wouldn't say they've rebuilt, but I mean, they've had a lot of draft picks in the last few years. And so, you know, one thing Marc Bergevin actually was quite good at was finding extra value in trades and accumulating those picks. But, you know, it's not like they have a whole bunch of veterans with 1 or 2 years left on their contracts. I mean, even I think of someone like Jeff Petrie, who's, you know, still a pretty impactful defenseman, but they extended him, I think, to a 4-year deal not too long ago. And so,
yeah.
You know, there's not a natural rebuild. I think that they'll stick by Price. I mean, obviously there was a window there where he could have been a Seattle Kraken when he was exposed in the expansion draft, but You know, they got guys like Ben Chiarot on an expiring deal. But, you know, there's not a lot of obvious pieces to trade. Maybe someone like Tyler Toffoli could be moved. But, you know, I think maybe rebuild is a frame of mind for them. You know, might not be just a this year process. It might be a multi-year process, and that could look a little different. But, you know, they've kind of been caught between, I feel like, as an organization, because they never did really rebuild during the Bergevin era. Like, they missed the playoffs, obviously, a couple of those seasons, but they never really tore it down. And that was by design. Mark Bergevin didn't want to do that. And maybe you're looking at a multi-year process under the new guys. I mean, there's still a lot yet to be determined. I think, you know, the hiring of Jeff Gordon happened very fast. You know, I'm sure he has some general ideas of how he wants to approach a team, but it's not like he's been thinking about this for months, and we don't yet know who the GM's going to be. And so, I think really how I interpreted that comment from Jeff Molson yesterday is he's willing to let, you know, these two people that are going to run his hockey department proceed as they wish, and if that includes a rebuild, he'll endorse it.
Yeah, I don't know what the easy way out here for Montreal is. I mean, you mentioned this, CJ, the rebuilds, you know, when teams want to go through that process, they have tradable contracts. I don't see many tradable contracts here on the Montreal Canadiens, because you've got guys that make a little bit too much money, but it's more the term that they've got left on their deals. I mean, you're talking about 4, 5, 6 year deals on players that you would need to move out if you want to go through that rebuild. So it's going to be tough treading, and they need to do something with that roster, because I think it's very poorly constructed with the way they play right now. And it doesn't help when your best defenseman, Jeff Petrie, is having the worst year of his career. I mean, he has right. 2 assists. This guy was a Norris Trophy candidate last year, and he has 2 assists this year. And I watch him play sometimes, and you just wonder, he's, you know, where just everything went, because he's just doesn't look like a confident player out there. So it's going to be difficult.
Their rebuild happened over the summer, and I don't even know if it was by design.
Right.
They lost like 9 guys off the team that played in the
Stanley Cup final. You're absolutely right.
So, I mean, that's they've already started the rebuild in a sense, because they lost, you know, Deneau and even a guy like Tatar. Like, I mean, they lost productive, useful players for them, and they haven't replaced them with guys that could pick up the slack.
Well, let's talk about the team that they played last night, and that's the Vancouver Canucks. And, man, you went into this game, you're like, oof. Like, this is a tough game for both teams to lose, because, you know, Montreal, you know, they got the jolt of a new president of hockey ops. They fired all their front office, but you kind of sense that the same thing or something similar is coming to Vancouver, and what a loss would have done for that team yesterday if they lost to Montreal. But they got a win. You got to think that maybe ownership and management is thinking that maybe this win can help, you know, springboard a winning streak or better play or whatever it is. But what do you see happening in Vancouver?
Well, I'm surprised nothing's happened so far, quite honestly. I mean, just because, you know, there were questions about this front office going back a couple seasons. You know, they had a pretty bold summer in the sense that they moved a lot of pieces and money around, and you know, the fact that it didn't, you know, it flopped so badly right out of the gate, you know, was, in my opinion, you know, grounds for house cleaning even this early in the year. I still think that's coming, quite honestly. I'd be surprised if at the start of next season there isn't basically a whole new cast of characters between the front office and the coaching staff. So, you know, but the one difference between Vancouver and Montreal that I think people might overlook is, you know, Montreal's hiring a GM that speaks French, which means they're not hiring anyone who's a GM in the league right now, because the only one who does that is Julien Brisebois, and he's very locked down and just signed a nice extension in Tampa. And so, you know, for them to do an in-season search for a manager, you know, there's no one they're not going to be allowed to talk to, because they would be giving anyone they'd be hiring a promotion. Whereas, you know, Vancouver might be looking a little differently at this. You know, they're drawing from a larger pool of candidates. They might want to see who's available, you know, come this offseason. They might not want to make that that hire during the year. And so if that's the case, you got to ride out the season. And I think that's where you try to find some hope, or that a small amount of momentum's built. I mean, they played well in Boston over the weekend, and then they win last night in Montreal. You know, Pettersson gets a goal. You know, you're just looking for signs that you can get through this season, and it's not going to, you know, be a total disaster.
Yeah.
And then maybe all this happens in the off season. You know, it's pretty clear ownership there doesn't have a clear, you know, and a good idea of what they want to do next. I think that's part of there's some indecision about who they want to hire, and how to proceed. And so, you know, the team could help them out with a few wins here because it'll at least buy some time while they make those determinations. And I'm with you. Had they lost last night, I mean, if this kept going, they might have forced them into action. But, you know, I don't think the ownership there wants to do anything too quickly.
Yeah, I thought for sure if they lost last night, we'd be breaking news this morning about something happening in Vancouver, but we're not. And if anything, we're talking about, breaking news about suspensions. Brad Marchand gets a 3-game suspension, 7th time he's been suspended in the NHL, which is, I don't know if it's surprising or crazy to think that a guy that good has been suspended that many times, but I think one that we're all waiting for is Brendan Lemieux. For his biting incident on Brady Tkachuk. What is your understanding on what type of suspension we could see here for Lemieux?
Well, the fact he's getting an in-person hearing pretty much guarantees it's going to be 6 games or more. And, you know, I always find that these are probably easier suspensions in a sense for player safety, even though it's going to be a big number because, I mean, let's face it, we all watch a lot of hockey. That doesn't happen too often, right? I mean, it's a pretty obvious crossing on the line, and you want to send a message that it's unacceptable. I mean, I don't see any reason that this wouldn't be something like 10 games or maybe even more for Lemieux. And, you know, he's been suspended in the past. It was long enough ago. He's not considered a repeat offender officially, but, you know, he's someone who's not unfamiliar to that department. And I just think with the nature of it, the fact that Tkachuk's bleeding, you know, it was meaning it wasn't just a small bite. It was pretty, he did it like he meant it, I guess.
Mike Tyson-esque.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just so far beyond the rules or outside of the scope of what's supposed to happen on the ice that, you know, I think it's going to be a significant suspension. And as I said, I don't even see it as that hard a decision. I think sometimes when they're debating a big hit, you know, the difference between something that's legal and illegal with how fast a game is played is not actually as wide maybe as a public views a bad hit. And so they're really trying to break it down. And, you know, I think something like this is just so clearly beyond the pale that you know, you're going to see a double-digit suspension in this case.
Chris, thank you very much for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it as always. It's the Leafs and the Avalanche on TSN 1050 tomorrow night at Scotiabank Arena. And looks like Nathan MacKinnon will be back as well for Colorado. So another tough test for the Leafs. Can they make it 15 of 17? We'll find out tomorrow night. Thanks for the time.
Red hot Nazem Kadri, too. Get your tickets.
That's right. The homecoming.
Coming back with a vengeance. Revenge game, as you like to say, AK.
I do love that narrative. All right.
See you,
boys. That is Chris Johnston, our hockey insider. Yeah, nasty Naz back in the area and about to cause mass hysteria for the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's a Naz line. Chris, our 20 fingers, our technical producer, shaking his head. I don't know why. That's a fantastic Illmatic reference. And for anyone who's East Coast rap fan from the 1990s, they will appreciate that reference apparently a lot more than our technical producer. Buster Olney, our ESPN MLB insider, will join us in about 15 minutes. You're going to want to stick around for that. He has the inside scoop on what really went down with Robbie Ray and the Toronto Blue Jays. How close was he to returning to Toronto, or did the Jays simply prefer Kevin Gausman to the reigning American League Cy Young Award winner? That's coming up in Hour 3 of First Stop.